Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, honorable minister. Honorable minister, you're welcome. We do not have much on our agenda today. There are only two items. One item will need members, only members. The other item with the minister and the department. And I suggest we are going to start with the item that we need an input from the minister, which is an introductory briefing on the defense review by the defense review committee and SECDEF. Honorable member, remember that we already had a workshop on this policy document. And then we must not forget the fact that this is a policy document. The reason that we should deal with it as a committee is because it's of national interest. This policy document impacts on the national security, it impacts on the foreign policy, it also impacts on our national interest. If that was not the case, we might have as well just left it to go on. And then, because if the police already, there is nothing that we can change about this document. So whenever we do whatever contribution, we should bear that in mind. Now, we are not going to need, we are not going to go into details, I hope, Honorable Minister. We should be out of this meeting before 10, because the other members do have their party caucuses. So we, Minister, you will just take us through the key issues of the policy document. Thank you very much. Over to you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. Honorable Members, it gives me a great pleasure that within a space of 2 weeks, we are once again meeting with you and our public representatives in this manner to take forward the work that needs to be done to finalize the Defense Review 2014. This is very important, and the convening of this meeting is a further demonstration of Parliament's own commitment to this important work that we must do together. I therefore want to take this opportunity, Honorable Chair, to thank the Honorable Members of this committee and the presiding officer for recognizing both the importance and the urgency that must be attached to the finalization of this review. I'm aware that it is a customary requirement that Parliament be a platform for contestation and political point scoring, but I'm sure that members from across the political divide will give due bona fide attention to defense review, given the far-reaching consequences for our country if we omit to do so. In this regard, I must thank all the members of the committee, particularly the opposition benches, for the general enthusiasm that has been expressed publicly and the appreciation for the need to do justice to the consideration of the defense review and its finalization. I'm confident that, despite the need for robust engagement, which can only enhance this process, members will generally reflect the same spirit and due consideration that the defense review is too important to the country for us to use it to prevent our big political tantrums in a bid to upstage one another. In a nutshell, Honorable Members, we are pleading that the defense review be the exception and be spared our legendary traditions and need for grandstanding. It is due to this importance of the defense review that I've lamented that many members were unable to be part of the workshop which was convened 2 weeks ago for us to have an in-depth discussion. Members have, however, expressed the various reasons for their absence, and I think we've accepted that we should now move beyond that, at least insofar as it relates to this review. I did, however, express my wish to the chairperson that should it be possible at all, we'd be allowed another opportunity to present in a more inclusive forum, at least so to allow a common point of departure on the process. I'm therefore very grateful to you all for being here. Although I have made a much detailed and protracted presentation at the workshop, I'm told it was over 4 hours. The setting of committee meeting may not allow us the same latitude today. We nevertheless have agreed that I'll make this introductory input and that the secretary and his team will remain and conduct the rest of the presentation. I don't know how, because there's a caucus at 10 o'clock for them. There are, however, important issues that we need to re-emphasize in laying the foundation for this discussion. In this regard, I must apologize to those who were at the workshop, and you may find some of the repetitive, but it's absolutely necessary that we bring everybody up to speed. Chairperson and other members, the SANDF is a direct role of our people's struggle for freedom and democracy. As our country and our people celebrate 20 years of hard-earned freedom, the country also marks the same number of years of gallant contribution of our defense force as a midwife for peace and development in the continent and the defender of our sovereign integrity here at home. Our defense force occupies a special place in our society as a national asset equipped with the special capabilities to defend our freedom and democracy. Therefore, creating conditions of peace and security necessary for all of us to enjoy the benefits of freedom. It is important that at all times, both as citizens and as members of Parliament, we bear this in mind in all our consideration about how we relate to the work of the South African National Defence Force. It is also for this reason that discussion of the future of the SANDF, as initiated by the release of the report of the Defence Review, occupies an important place in our nation's public discourse. This process in Parliament is an essential and key component of this public discourse. Chairpersons and colleagues, on the 19th March 2014, Cabinet approved the Defence Review Committee report, which recommends a comprehensive defence policy blueprint for the next 20 to 30 years. The Defence Review was appointed by the Minister of Defence and Ministry of Defence periodically to assist government to assess the state of its defence organisation, its mandate, its capabilities and design with a view to identify areas requiring review and suggest future intervention. The Defence Review 2014 is only our second since 1994 and therefore the first one to review the work of the SANDF based on practical functioning of our military in our democracy. The 1996 White Paper on Defence and the 1998 Defence Review focused on the challenges of the transition from apartheid to a democratic South Africa. Issues arising from the integration of 7 statutory and non-statutory forces into 1 South African National Defence Force and the transformation of the latter were central to these 2 documents. Since then, the role of the SANDF at home in the Southern African region and the rest of the continent had increased to an extent not envisaged by the 1996 White Paper and the Defence Review that followed 2 years later. While the first review assumed that the Defence Force would only deploy 1 battalion for external operations in Africa in 2006, as many as 4 were deployed in various parts of the continent. Currently, we have 2 battalions in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo and in the Darfur region of Sudan. Defense commitments far exceeded what was anticipated in the aftermath of the advent of democracy. In the SADC region, various treaties and protocols on defense and security cooperation require that the SANDF should commit troops and assets. At home, the Defense Force took over the patrol of land borders for the police, currently committing 4 battalions. Not only is South Africa a key economic player in the continent, but given our enviable record of peaceful conflict resolution, we are expected to play a leading role in the stabilization of the continent. Most importantly, however, it is also in our national interest to have a stable continent with accruing benefits for a shared food security, development, security and the building of economic relations with the rest of the continent. Without the need to go into a lot of technical detail at this stage, the Defence Review of 2014 recognizes and emphasizes this reality, that over the past 16 years, commitments that we have had to make have resulted in a mismatch between what is expected from the defense force and its capacity or resources allocated to it. This is a crucial point highlighted in the current report, as it notes that, and I quote, the persistent disconnect between the defense mandate, government expectations, and the resource allocation has eroded defense capabilities to the point where the defense force is unable to fully deliver its constitutional responsibility to defend and protect South Africa and its people, and further, cannot even support the current modest level of ambition. Close quote. Further states, open quote, even with an immediate intervention, it will take at least 5 years to stabilize the decline of another 5 years and another 5 years to develop a limited and sustainable defense capability. The longer the current state of affairs is perpetuated, the greater the effort and cost it will be to arrest the decline and restore the capabilities required to safeguard South Africa's borders, protect its maritime trade routes, defend the countries against aggression, and conduct peace missions. It is clear from this observation that this mismatch has caused overstretch and a decline in most aspects of the defense forces' work. There is urgent need, therefore, to replace all equipment and critical gaps in air, maritime, health, and landward capability must be planned. Restocking of munitions and spares is required. There are insufficient troops for commitments we have resulted in, inter alia, long rotation cycles that negatively impact on morale and training. In addition, resources must be allocated for force rejuvenation, training, and for the repair and maintenance of current equipment and facilities. These and other shortcomings must be addressed to prevent a steady degradation of the defense force and the disastrous consequences that would follow. The question crucially posed by the defense review is what we want the defense force to do at home, in the region, and the rest of the continent. Once that question is definitely answered, adequate resources must be allocated to enable it to execute its mandate with the requisite effectiveness and efficiency. The feedback from public hearings on the defense review and in the cabinet discussion, the option of scaling down our commitments was not accepted. Let me also indicate that, despite the constraints mentioned above, the Defence Force has performed admirably well over the past 20 years, itself a point worth acknowledging, but for which we have very little time to celebrate. From this financial year, and looking forward to the next 20 years, we must take all measures to ensure that the Defence Force is not handicapped and in any way in the execution of its mandate. This is precisely what the Defence Review is intended to achieve. Its report makes recommendations on the assumption that military will continue to have four main responsibilities, and namely, these are to defend and protect the Republic of South Africa, to safeguard its borders and infrastructure, to promote peace and security in the continent, and to perform developmental and other tasks assigned to it. And on the basis of this assumption, The review recommends that we strive to achieve five key milestones, which are, one, to arrest the decline of the SANDF, to rebalance force by reprioritizing, to ensure capacity meets current needs, to develop capacity to meet future challenges, and lastly, to build the strength to deal with a limited war should the need arise. So that those are the five critical milestones identified in this review, Honourable Members. And to be able to achieve the above, the review recommends that a crisis response capability be developed by expanding special forces with all the support elements needed, like air and sea lift capability. Two, a border protection capability be developed with required land, air, sea resources with patrol vessels, aircraft, and shore centers. Three, forces be re-equipped for external peacekeeping and enforcement missions. And four, medium and heavy forces be modernized to bolster defense capability. Honorable members, Chairperson Tulu, there are costs attached to these milestones, but the review could only give rough estimates. It is up to the leadership of the SANDF to develop a force design that will allow for more precise costing. A general point is, however, mentioned that at 1% of GDP, current funding levels are inadequate and below the international norm of about 2% for a developing country at peace. In fact, comparatively speaking, it can be argued that although South Africa is a developing country at peace, its responsibilities on the continent justify defense expenditure slightly above 2% of the GDP. As the presentation will show, this is not the central issue in the review, and issues about resources require a more practical consideration by the whole of government. In this regard, consideration should be made of the requirements of South African National Defence Force, the redefinition of its force structures, the ability to restructure and maximize value from its current allocation and expenditure patterns, as well as the development of a future funding model. So we are still a long way from the ideal of a 2% allocation as a share of the country's GDP. It will have to be justified through this planning and implementation instruments we are putting in place. The review, therefore, also makes recommendations in other areas of the SANDF's work, such as the development of military leaders, recruitment, education, training, discipline, procurement, and communication. There is a lot that can be done to improve performance in these areas at low cost, if any, and the presentation by team will therefore later demonstrate. The review also directs us to develop a coherent policy on the defense industry, which has a vital role to play in re-equipping the defense force and sustain our own capability. The defense industry has enormous potential to contribute to economic growth, job creation, technological innovation, scientific research, and skills development. It needs, however, to have a sustainable and long-term role as supplier to the SANDF. In order to stimulate this potential, government as a whole also needs to assist the defense industry to penetrate export markets to create more jobs at home and generate foreign revenue. Honorable members, through you, Chair, at my request, the review identified quick wins, which can be done at minimal or no cost at all. These relate mainly to the restructuring of the three arms of service, namely the Army, Navy, and the Air Force. Improvements in our medical institution, commitment to agent acquisitions, and management of the naval dockyard. We have already started addressing some of these issues. The report adopted by Cabinet, which we present here today, is a comprehensive one. The committee consulted with a wide range of stakeholders, including ordinary members of communities throughout the country. This engagement will continue, including in this House during the next phase of policy formulation, legislation, and implementation. What is important for us is that the country should build a national consensus on defense policy, given its critical importance. How do we see the process unfolding beyond the stage of engagement? In improving the review, Cabinet directed the following: that the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans ensure that the military strategy, force design, force structure, capability, strategy and acquisition plans, and funding trajectory are translated into an extended long-term defense development program, which is aligned and integrated into government planning cycle. In that, the South African Defense Review 2014 be submitted to Parliament. Chairperson, earlier this year during our budget vote debate, I indicated that this programmatic directive of the Cabinet constitutes the broad programmatic trust of the Ministry and its two departments. In fact, during the workshop which you convened, I had reiterated and made reference to some of the main issues we raised with honourable members at the time, and we said, and I quote, "We do not have a choice but to respond with urgency to put plans to arrest the decline within the current 5 years, starting immediately during the financial year. 5 years is averagely the amount of time it will take us to develop a limited and sustainable defence capability. The longer the neglect is perpetuated, the greater the effort, time, and cost it will take to arrest the decline, close quote. Although the SANDF is still able to maintain operational presence, if we do not start now, decline will get worse. Our mandate in the next 5 years is to act fast to restore the minimum capability required to safeguard South Africa, protect its maritime resources and trade routes, conduct peace mission and humanitarian intervention. Over the next 5 years, as part of the first milestone, the ministry will therefore focus on the following strategic areas, ensuring strategic leadership and succession plan for the defense program over the next 20 years. 2, developing the funding mechanism and ensure adequate resourcing of the defense function. 3, we will direct the renewal of the defense personnel to ensure that the personnel profile is able to meet the future defense obligation. 4, we will direct the renewal of defense organization to achieve greater efficiency and effectiveness. Reviewing the defense capability strategy and direct defense administration in line with the 4 milestones of the defense review. And will direct the development of the defense industry strategy and the technology agenda and innovation plans in support of the defense development program, as well as the integration of the defense industry into the mainstream industrial policy. Now, without preempting the outcome of the parliamentary process, the ministry will ensure that during this financial year, both the Secretary of Defense and the Chief of the South African National Defense Force lay the necessary groundwork towards the attainment of immediate milestones in line with the performance agreement to be signed with the President. This agreement has now been presented to me for my signature last week, and we have to at least anticipate the implementation of the defense review in this MTSF. Otherwise, we lose another 5 years. As Minister, I'll provide comprehensive directives that formally sets out the key performance areas of the Ministry, the Defence Secretariat and the Defence Force for the next 5 years and the forthcoming MTSF procedure. The Department has established a Defence Review Implementation Team whose responsibility is to discuss the various methodology options and develop a plan for implementation. Once Parliament has finalized this process, we will immediately establish an enterprise-wide program office to look at the staggered implementation of the report in terms of the various milestones and time frame. It is, however, important that the committee sets itself clear timelines for the urgent finalization of this report. I urge honorable members to consider this as a matter of utmost importance, considering the amount of time we've already lost once the Joint Standing Committee on Defense was being established. Colleagues will remember that CANET adopted the Defence Review Report on the 19th of March, before the end of the previous term. Given the seriousness of the diagnostic assessment of the review on the state of the Defence Force, it is envisaged that the implementation of the first milestone, which is arresting the decline, will be implemented over the next 5 years. This is the same period coinciding with the 5-year medium-term strategic framework of the current term of office 2014-19. The implementation of the Defence Review has already missed important windows with regards to the alignment to the government planning and budgeting cycle. I'm confident, however, that together with the committees and Parliament, we'll work on the revised timeline, bearing in mind the amount of time we've already lost. Whilst it is important that Parliament be thorough and pays adequate attention to this defense review discourse, we should avoid a long protracted process that will end up in futility if the review cannot be incorporated for the implementation in the planning processes of the MTSF. We also are fortunate, as we will show in this presentation, that the process of developing the defense review, which has spent over 5 years, involves extensive consultation and wide public participation process, and it is well documented in the report. We can only plead that the committee become considerate in formulating its plan for this work. I thank you, honorable members, and request that the chairperson allows our team to get ready to present the detail of the report to you as led by the accounting officer, Dr. Sengulube. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. we will now go to straight into the presentation. And then thereafter, we'll just ask honorable members to comment. And that will be that. Thank you. Secretary for Defense.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Minister, Honorable Members. We have then received the invitation and we will stick to the objectives as stated in the program, which stated that the presentation should include the special elements of the Chapter 4 Defense Review dealing with civil oversight of the military and the proposed force design. But for this to be able to be properly reflected, as the Minister has indicated, we will give an overview of the whole defense review. I have here my team, General Ramansana and Mr. Nick Vindal, as well as General Briggs, and General Briggs will lead us with the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Can we continue, ma'am? Thank you. Okay. Getting into the presentation of the defense review, we start by reflecting on the State of the Nation address that was delivered by our President in June of 2014, in which he indicated at the national strategic level the importance of the defense force, the importance of the work we are continuing to do on the African continent, and spoke specifically to the issue around the resourcing of the defense force and the defense mandate in line with the recently concluded defense review. He also indicated that he would be discussing the detailed defense implementation plans of the defense review with the minister and incorporating them into a performance agreement for the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans to sign and to work with over the next 5 years. In terms of that, and the Minister alluded to it at the JTPS Cabinet Committee when it was presented on the 13th of March, the Cabinet Committee reflected on it and stated that the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans ensures that the military strategy, force structure, force design, capability strategy, acquisition plans and funding trajectory are translated into extended long-term defence development program, which is aligned and integrated into government planning cycle. This is essentially the imperative for the next 5 years. This is the work we have to do, and that, in fact, the Cabinet and Parliament will be the visibility on this work. Just as a quick orientation to the defence review, for those of you that have seen it, you should have, it was tabled on the 3rd of July of this year. It consists of 15 chapters, starting with an introduction where we look at the report provides for the requirement of a defense review in the, should we say, evolution of South Africa defense policy. And of course, in the introduction, we set out 8 policy principles that guide the recommendations, not only in terms of the defense force and its posture within the national strategic setting, but also internal to the defense force in terms of some basic principles of how we would pack and put the defense force together towards a very professional service or capability for the Republic of South Africa. In Chapter 1, we refer to the South Africa in terms of its position as a developmental state, and from a developmental perspective made certain recommendations around the positioning of the defense force. We were cognizant of the development of the National Development Plan. At the same time, we did the defense review, and in terms of that, we recognized certain issues that were highlighted by the diagnostic report on the development plan that we need to take cognizance of, and in fact guided some thinking in terms of a contribution, potential contributions that the defense force could make towards
the developmental agenda of South Africa. In chapter two, we looked at the strategic environment. Very importantly, we had to analyze the space in which South Africa exists predominantly, and then, of course, the space in which the Defence Force exists within that context of South Africa on the continent and in the world. And we looked at specifically the drivers of present and future conflict, because they indicate the design imperatives that we need to look to and the development of our capability suites within the Defence Force going forward. In Chapter 3, we discussed defence and national security. I think you will recall that up until the recent conclusion of the national security strategy, the Defence Force operated within somewhat of a policy vacuum when it came to the determination of its specific position within national security. However, nonetheless, taking the lead from the Constitution, it was able to always function at that correct level. But in this particular chapter, we get into the detail and we've aligned the Defence Force in terms of the national security strategy, and then on the back of that and understanding the strategic environment, we were able to finalise and to formalise the defence mission and of course the subsequent goals and tasks, four goals and 13 tasks. In Chapter 4 we unpacked the regulatory framework in as much as we speak to the directing of the defence function, speak clearly to the role of the President as the Commander-in-Chief, the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans, and of course the Chief and the Secretary for Defence, and understanding how we can in fact improve on the concepts of civil control and civil oversight that function provided to us by Parliament. In Chapters 5, 6, 7 and 8, we refer to the goals that we assigned to the Defence Force. The first one being the issues around defending and protecting South Africa. The second being the safeguarding function that we have on behalf of South Africa. Then the third being our regional and continental peace and security obligations. And the fourth being the developmental and other tasks that are assigned to the Defence Force, and a broad discussion around those. In Chapter 9 really is the pivotal chapter of this report. In this report we discuss the defence strategic trajectory, which essentially is taking the Defence Force, analysing it in terms of where it is right now, and understanding where it needs to go to, and then obviously positioning that in terms of four specific milestones, and a fifth, which is a contingency milestone, which is the preparation for war, should that eventuality arise at some future date. But ideally in terms of the level of ambition as determined, we look at the strategic trajectory in bite-sized chunks, if you like, over four or five-year periods, MTSS periods, which take care of the 20-year period that we've been talking about, in which we look at this development of defence. So it's by no means that the implementation of the defence review by no means is an event. It's a process. It's a process that has to be integrated with government and capability of government. It's got to be integrated with South Africa and the capability of South Africa to support such a defence development trajectory. In Chapter 10, it's really focused more internally to the defence organisation. And here, force generation guidelines are given to specifically the services and the divisions in terms of the focus areas they have to look at, what they have to leave behind, and the strategic outcomes that they must achieve going forward. And then in Chapter 11, a pivotal chapter as well, in the Defence Review, is where we go into a very detailed discussion of how we see the development of our future leaders and the relationship of that development program to the broader South Africa in general. One of the things that we recognise, of course, is the importance of military and development of leadership and how that ultimately filters back into society as men leave the organisation and pursue other careers. We recognise that the Defence Force to be vibrant and have the vitality that it needs has to have a relatively fast throughput, and that not everybody will have lifelong careers. But nonetheless, we have a huge potential obligation, and in fact it can make a massive contribution to the developmental agenda of South Africa through our leadership development programs. In Chapter 12 we re-examine the disciplinary system for defence as per specific constitutional court pronouncements, and we align the defence disciplinary system to ensure that we have a disciplined military force going forward. In chapter 13, we've got our management systems, and we recognize the current legacy systems and somewhat disjointed legacy systems, and propose and recommend an integrated system going forward. And then, of course, in chapter 14, we look at our resource systems and how we propose to manage them and how we propose to refocus them towards the outcomes which primarily are around supporting the operational output of the South African National Defence Force. Chapter 15, the last chapter of the Defence Review, we speak to defence industry and policy and strategy, and we recognise the fundamental importance of the defence industry in not only supporting this trajectory, but as a catalyst for the development of new technologies in mainstream South Africa, and then of course the spin-offs that we can achieve from a vibrant and a viable defence industry into mainstream South African industrial platforms. So hugely important to us is if we are going to take this defence force forward, we have to understand it's a relationship with a viable defence industry. So in terms of the process that we followed on the defence review developmental process, we will recall that the Minister of Defence mandated and formed and constituted the Defence Committee, the Defence Review Committee, in around about 2011. And she spelled out specific terms of reference to the committee, and the committee went ahead and did some work by conducting a pre-study of some 44 international defence reviews, and a more detailed study of 10 reviews done in the last 4 years. Three or four of those reviews were in fact reviews done on the African continent, and it gave the committee a feel for issues on defence at the national policy level. The Defence Review then went and conducted a diagnostic of the defence organisation. It took presentations from all sectors of the defence organisation, of services, the divisions, and various stakeholders in the defence organisation, and was able to formulate the fundamental conclusions that were the foundation for some of the recommendations, and in fact most of the recommendations that it did make. The review team also consulted with the African Union, SADC, and other international organisations to get a feel and an understanding of how South Africa is seen and viewed by the rest of the world, and specifically on the African continent, the expectations that, for example, the African Union, other African states, countries have with regard to the role, or the leadership role, that they expect South Africa to play going forward. The review conducted 461 formal engagements. It published a first order draft, which then was able to facilitate or create the platform in which we could then conduct another 148 formal consultations with various stakeholders who responded and reacted to the first published draft, which was in April of 2012. And the review team went and held a series of 10 visas at grassroots level into the provinces of South Africa to get a feel from the communities at large as to how they viewed the defence force, firstly. Secondly, from their perspective, what they believe to be important in a defence force going forward. And then, of course, the Defence Review Committee then consolidated the content of more than 76 written submissions that were given to the committee for consideration. These submissions were not only from defence analysts around the world, but also academia and other interested parties, some individuals who followed the defence debate over years, also made some very useful, some of them very useful submissions. Some of them obviously weren't quite in line with the thinking of the Defence Review, but nonetheless were considered in the finalisation of the final report. Moving into the strategic overview of the continent, we can have a very detailed discussion in terms of the various countries on the continent and their contribution to the continent as a whole. But strategically, we look at really the big five on the from an African Union perspective, and we understand that the strategic role that they play on the continent, the influential role that they play on the continent. We compare ourselves to the other four countries. We obviously consider ourselves as one of the big five in the African Union. And it really goes to a large extent about the influence that you have, but probably more importantly from an African Union perspective is the level of funding derived from these five countries towards the activities of the African Union. I'm not going to go into the detail of this. We can do this at a later stage. We also look at some of the top continental defence budgets And we see clearly that countries that are influential in their regions definitely spend a lot more on defense than what South Africa does as a percentage of GDP. You might ask the question as to why we look at percentage of GDP as the measure. Well, simply put, not every country has the same level of GDP in real terms. But what it definitely indicates is the level of, should we say, national will towards defense within those particular countries. But what we do see on the African continent, that the key driver for defense capabilities is essentially the internal security burdens that most of these countries face, and that South Africa is in the unique position that it does not have the level of internal security burden that other countries have on the African continent, and therefore can focus on building a relevant and ready defense capability for the future. Other countries in Africa tend to use the defense forces for internal policing functions. We have the privilege in South Africa of a police force that can in fact do that for us. If we look at the security situation in Africa and unpack it in terms of the six key drivers, we look at political uncertainty, fundamentalism and extremism, rebel forces, resource-driven conflicts, border disputes and maritime crime. You only have to pick up the newspaper on a daily basis to see that these are the fundamental issues that drive security or insecurity on the African continent. And clearly we can see there are six zones of insecurity. The most important one for us being that this zone of insecurity that extends from Somalia through to the Great Lakes region. That is the closest to us, and it is in fact the most unstable area on the African continent. And we have to point out that between that unstable area, and particularly the Great Lakes region and South Africa, there's very little in the way of defense capability other than than ourselves with regard to potential threats for the future. We just take note of that. On the back of that, we look at some acquisition programs in the region of Africa, in this case the Northwest region, and we analyze those acquisition programs, and you can see clearly the links between those programs and, in fact, the strategic circumstances that the individual countries face. On the African continent, I draw your attention to the fact that Algeria is, in fact, by far the biggest spender on defense, spending approximately four times the budget that South Africa has on defense. But it is consumed with internal challenges, strife, rebel forces, fundamentalism and extremism, and of course the maritime insecurity threat that's growing in the Mediterranean Sea. Looking at northeastern Africa, and once again analyzing the acquisition programs that these countries have to boost their defense capabilities, once again, you can see clearly that it is in response to the challenges that they face on a daily basis. In particular, I draw your attention to Kenya and the upscaling of its defense capability, largely in response to the movement of the epicenter of fundamentalism, extremism, and terrorism towards Central Africa. And in the case of Kenya, the particular threat that it faces from organizations like Al-Shabaab with regard to their internal security challenges. In southern Africa, we look at the countries around us. Clearly, we see that the country with the biggest spend on defense is Angola. It's approximately double the defense expenditure of South Africa. We don't regard that to be a threat, but it's interesting to note the vital interest that Angola presumes to protect with regard to that particular defense acquisition program. It, of course, has a strategic requirement to look after the Cabinda province, which is that province that they have, which is oil and gas rich, and obviously in its national interest. Most of their exports come and their foreign exchange earnings come from those resources which they distribute around the world. So moving on from that and looking at foreign interests on the African continent, because we can't just only analyze the situation from an internal security perspective. There are other role players on the African continent, and we've got to look at what their interests are and how they affect the African continent. We look at, for example, the balance of trade, and we look at countries that do the most trade with Africa, and interestingly we see where South Africa is positioned at number seven as the number seven trade partner to the African continent in terms of the full balance of trade. That's export and import. What is interesting is exactly what the President said in the State of the Nation address, is the importance of sub-Saharan Africa with regard to growing our trade on the African continent. And where we see this figure, which was the figure that was provided in terms of 2012 trade figures with Africa, it is clear that has grown by 50% in the last year and a half to $33.2 billion benefit to South Africa, Sub-Saharan African trade. The international military cooperation, various key players on the continent, and I'll unpack the slideshow, only to say that it's really traditionally countries like, for example, the US and very, very importantly France on the African continent, that they have an influence from a military cooperation point of view. We see the United Kingdom as almost withdrawing from the African continent, although they probably say they don't, but they in fact have become less important on the African continent as far as military cooperation is concerned. But interestingly, as a general observation in understanding the growth of military cooperation, which countries have got more involved over time and those that have got less involved over time, we see the growing importance of China in all three of the zones that we analyzed on the African continent. If we look at focusing the future effort of our defense force, it is clear that almost half of the sub-Saharan Africa is directly affected by the zone of instability that we refer to as the Great Lakes region. It is clear that this region, if one can deal with the security circumstances in that region, will have a profound effect on the security circumstances in the whole of Africa. So the key to African security and the rollback of insecurity lies in being able to deal with what is going on in the Great Lakes area. But having said that and understanding those dynamics in that area, we need to understand that there are two other regions that we can give you strategic early warning on that will have a profound effect in the future on instability on the African continent. So once we've analyzed that, it is clear to us, we look at our own constitution and where we sit today, we can formulate for you our national interests. Our national interests or our vital interests that in fact the defense function and the defense organization has to prepare itself to defend. Firstly, we have to protect our sovereignty, our territorial integrity, including our airspace and our islands and our territorial waters, our exclusive economic zone and our extended continental shelf chain. The second vital interest is to secure our strategic resources, such as minerals, energy, and water, including the safe and secure delivery, processing, and distribution thereof. And here we will include strategic resources that lie outside the borders of South Africa. That is a defense function. For example, we can look at the Inga Power Scheme, the Grand Inga Power Scheme, on the Congo River, and I refer you on the slideshow to that particular zone. Only yesterday, the Minister of Energy had a long discussion on the importance of that for South Africa's future from a sustainable energy point of view. Then the third vital interest is securing our ability to trade and our freedom to trade, including the free use of our land and our air and our sea routes, and of course the safety and security of our trade and the transport hubs. Clearly, South Africa, its economy, is approximately 50% export-driven, and of the exports, 95% of those exports are delivered by sea. So a significant size of our economy, approximately 50% of our economy, is transported on maritime routes. Absolutely essential that these routes of trade be protected going forward. That's the third vital interest. The fourth vital interest is to achieve peace, security, and stability in the region, which will create the climate and conditions for economic growth and development to take place, and the expansion of our markets into Africa. That's payback at the end. Our defense mission, defend and protect South Africa, its territory, its sovereignty and people, and enhance peace, security, and development. And towards that, there are four goals and 13 tasks. The four goals I mentioned to you earlier, but the subtasks of those goals are, for example, task one, to deter and prevent conflict. Task two, protect our national interests or our vital interests. Task three is to defend South Africa. That is the task that is specified in the Constitution. In goal two, we look at the safeguarding function. We look specifically at our border safeguarding. We look also at the safeguarding of our critical infrastructure as a contingent liability, and something we take cognizance of in the Defence Review Report as something that might come to defence at a later stage. And then, of course, Task 6, we look at support to the police services. It's an internal role that we play under certain legal circumstances. And then Task 7, looking at ensuring our information security, and that's essentially the higher order word for something that is more commonly known as cyber defense. In Goal 3, we look at promoting people security, and in this particular environment, we look specifically at the core function of promoting our strategic influence. Clearly, the defense foreign relations function and the defense diplomacy function has to be linked to our foreign policy. And it is the effort that we put into promoting strategic influence that will have a massive bearing on our strategic defense going forward. And then, of course, in Task 9, we look to contributing to peace and stability through various methods. And you're probably very familiar with the current peace support and the intervention operations that we are doing on the African continent, conducting on the African continent. In Goal 4, we look at developmental and other audit tasks. Specifically here, we look at our treaty obligations and the obligation that we have to ensure those. I look at, for example, a certain rescue obligation, which extends an area all the way across to, halfway across to Brazil and Argentina, and on the east coast, almost halfway to Australia, and then, of course, extends down to the South Pole. It's a massive area of approximately 4.3 million square kilometers. It's an enormous area to cover when it comes to that particular function. In Task 11, we look at order presidents of task. And Task 12, we look at the assistance to civil authority as may be ordered on specific request. And then Task 13, our potential contribution to the development of South Africa and its people. And we highlight some areas in which the Defence Force can make a contribution without distracting it from its core function, which is to prepare for military operations and to conduct military operations. So essentially, when we look at the defense requirement, we look at the defense budget as a percentage of GDP, as it has been analyzed over a 100-year period. We see the strategic circumstances that contributed to the peaks and the troughs of those budgets, but we find where we are right now in a situation where we only have approximately 1.1% of the GDP of South Africa, hugely disconnected from the expectation that we give to the defense force and the defense function as a whole, in terms of South Africa's requirement on the continent. When we look internal to the organization, we find that we have some serious challenges with regard to the balance of the budget. And from a strategic point of view, at a corporate level, it's very difficult to analyze the budget at approximately 2,000 lines of items and item codes. So one has to then take that to a level where it makes more sense. And here we just look at the relationship between the amount of money spent on personnel, the amount of money spent on the operating budget, in other words, getting the people to be able to do stuff, and of course the amount of money we spend on acquisition, on capital equipment, the equipment and that technology that we require to have the strategic advantage in any military operations. And we find that over time, we see a situation where we have a growing spend on the human resource component. We've maintained almost a steady state, if you like, with regard to the operating budget at approximately 30 to 35% of our allocation. But what has suffered, unfortunately, is the amount of money we spend on our capital equipment and the renewal of that equipment, to the extent that we have a lot of obsolete equipment that is not exactly what we require for the operations that we face. So in defining the joint defense capability requirements, it is clear that one of the things that we have to deal with is the effort that we put and the focus that we give to our defense diplomacy and our ability to influence that strategic agenda on the fora, the multilateral fora that we are represented on, firstly, and then of course strategic partners that we have identified through our foreign policy has been key to South Africa's future. And of course the fostering of long-standing relationships with key African states and other strategic partners for the future. We've made specific recommendations around the command and control of our defense establishment, as well as the intelligence function and how that should be aligned to support the military operations, not only at the tactical level, but also at the operational and strategic levels going forward. what is obvious is the requirement for enhanced special forces capability. This is one of the centers of excellence in our defense force. It is extremely well run and is extremely effective. And we recommend that this capability be enhanced and expanded for what we believe to be the kind of situations that we'll face in the future. We also look at the creation of an intervention capability through what we call a high readiness intervention rapid deployment force, which we speak specifically to the strength of that and the capability of that. Further to that, we look at the boosting of our medium and our heavy combat forces towards being relevant and ready for the future. But more importantly is that we must ensure that in any military operation that we conduct, be it a peace mission or a peace enforcement mission, that we have the appropriate levels of maneuver and protection, and of course firepower, that we do not find ourselves in a situation where our members are at unnecessary risk. We look at the recommendations around the maritime environment and boosting our maritime patrol capability. And this we look at specifically the kind of type of platforms that we might need and some of the gaps that we see in the Navy that we have. And specifically with regard to inshore and offshore patrol, and then of course maritime domain awareness as being the key issues that we have to deal with going forward. Looking further to our air defense capability, we have to look specifically at the role of our Air Force as it pertains to the support of our Army forces as well as our Navy forces in as much as the joint requirement for air defense operations and also the strategic list requirements to support the forces, the other components of the defense force going forward. We look at our ability to project our forces, the expeditionary requirement, in other words, being able to take our horses, project them into a distant theatre, if you like, on the African continent, and not only just being able to project them, but also to how do we sustain them once they're there, and for how long are we going to sustain them, and on the back of that, certain recommendations are made in that regard, specifically recommendations in the issues of information warfare or cyber defence. We do that as well. And then, of course, we come to the formulation of the defence capability. We give you a pictorial representation of what we see that the joint defence capability being made up of. Here we have our domain awareness, command and control, intelligence function. We also have our special forces, our Army, our Air Force, our Navy, our military health, and our cyber information defence, cyber or information defence, and very importantly, our disaster relief capability that we need to have in place for the future. We do an analysis of each of our services, and in the case of the Army, we are faced with a situation where we have block obsolescence. We have certain capability gaps for effective adequate defense, and on the back of that, we need to have interventions over this 20-year period to make sure that our Army is relevant and ready for the future. Currently, what we have within our Army component is a great deal of risk with regard to the equipment that we have. If you were to do visits to our Army and you were to have these discussions in detail, they'll be able to unpack the detail of these issues. Similarly, we looked at air operations, which is the Air Force. We looked at the ability to conduct air operations and our air defense imperatives, and we see specifically gaps in the capability suite that we have, and we have massive risk in terms of existing capabilities vis-à-vis the capacity of those capabilities as well as the sustainability of those capabilities. Yeah. So in terms of the slides, just to draw your attention, where we put a no entry sign, that means we don't have that. The slide before these pictures, for example, what we need as a comprehensive air operations capability. When we get to positioning the no entry sign, if you like, that indicates the gap. We just do not have those capabilities, or we've lost those capabilities. And the second part is where we have the band-aid strip over that capability is where we have significant risk on those capabilities with regard to where we are right now, the capacity and the requirement. We go back to the Army slide just quickly. Similarly, we see exactly the same thing. The capabilities that we've lost. You will notice that where we say Army operations, you will see that there's a Navy component to it. There are ships and there are aircraft. In order for the Army to conduct operations, it is very dependent on both the Navy and the Air Force, as well as the military health service, to be able to conduct operations. And it's under those circumstances and how they relate to the Army that we position the gaps for you and, of course, the risks for you in terms of capacity and sustainability.
The importance of these guys, if that actually shows you if you want your information on a particular issue, you can see it and then you can express that if you stand on it very clearly. It's a graphical picture where you can see immediately where the interventions need to be.
Similarly, we unpack the naval operations capability of the Navy and once again highlight the gaps that we have in the capability suite that we require, and then of course those capabilities that are at risk for effective maritime operations going forward. Similarly, in special forces, happens to be one of the capabilities that doesn't have huge gaps because of the sheer size and the nature of the way they operate, but nonetheless does have gaps from a capability point of view, and it does have risk from a sustainability perspective. We just need a lot more of special forces going forward. In the military health environment, I'm sure that we're aware, that members, the honourable members, are aware of the challenges that our military health service has faced over time, and the extreme challenges they have with being able to deliver military health service to deployed forces, and I'm sure you're aware of the risks that we have in that environment, but we have highlighted specific recommendations in this regard to improve the circumstances going forward. So if we look at the defense strategic trajectory, and I won't go through, the minister alluded to the 5 milestones, and this is merely a graphic representation thereof. If we take the x-axis, you'll see a figure of 2015 to 2035. That is approximately the 20-year trajectory that we're proposing, the timeline that we need to go through over the next 20 years to achieve what we need to do in terms of the level of ambition. On the y-axis, you will see definitions or statements ranging from reduced defense force, reduced core growth capability, up to a scale of significant reach and intervene, and of course limited rule. That is the level of ambition that you can define for this defense force going forward. So where we are right now, in terms of the 1998 defense review, it specified and stipulated that we should aim at a core growth capability as the level of ambition. We very quickly have seen that a core growth capability is completely inappropriate for the type of work that government expects the defense force to do. The level of engagement on the African continent, the level of engagement in our borders and defending our airspace and our maritime zone speaks to a defense capability way beyond core growth. And that is the dilemma that we face. So essentially what we're saying for the 2014 defense review, we are saying that it positions a completely different level of ambition, where we focus on being able to reach and intervene and assist on the continent with regard to specific circumstances. It's a vast difference from the 1998 Defence Review pitch. And it is very much in line with the work we are doing now, but we are doing the work now on the back of a strategic position of reduced core growth, which is not appropriate. So looking at where we start, we understand we have a wide range of status with regard to current capabilities. Stuff that we will need and equipment that we will need and capabilities we will need for milestone 4, 20 years from now. We've in fact been forced to close and to shut down those capabilities in order for others to survive on the basis of the work that we do. So if we look at the road forward, we've really got 3 options or trajectories that we can follow. 3, should we say, scenarios that we can follow, depending on how we're going to approach this. We can take this current status quo, where we have a limited resource baseline, and to a large degree the resource baseline is very limiting. Yes, there's work that the Defence Force can do to improve its efficiencies and effectiveness in the internal process, the way it's structured, and it can get a bigger impact out of having done that. But in the long run, the current budget allocation will never achieve the defense force that we envisage to be able to reach and intervene in the future. Where we start with a wide range of capabilities. We can follow the limited resource baseline trajectory, and yes, we can do a lot of internal engineering, and yes, we can create a positive trajectory, but that will never achieve the objective. What we would prefer to do is to take an independent sovereign approach towards developing this defense force going forward. But it will take a lot of working together, everybody, to get the consensus on defense, to get the public to agree, and for us to resource this defense force going forward. The other option, of course, is to rely on strategic partners and to have multiple strategic partners which can come to the table in terms of providing us, maybe there are partners that we have that could assist us with equipment. But that essentially, those are the options that we have going forward. And whatever trajectory we follow, we're going to go through a period of initial decline. It's going to take at least the next 5 years to start turning the ship around. Ideally, what we want to do is to create more normalization of the budget and a normalization of the apportionment between operating, the personnel expenditure, of course, the amount of money we spend on capital. What we need to do is we need to understand that we have a defense capability in Milestone 1 that is not sustainable. We are conducting operations in terms of border safeguarding. We are conducting operations in maritime patrol. We are conducting two medium-sized peace support operations. Well, one is an intervention operation, the other one is a peace support operation. We have a very limited capability to reach and intervene at this point in time. It's almost at the level of just a special forces hospital. That is where we are now. So for 43 billion, we can't sustain these operations. We're finding that we can go into the details, but I don't think it's for today. But we are really having a real struggle to get to sustain these operations. The people themselves are suffering under it. The minister mentioned the cycle of deployment. 1 year in, 1 year out. I mean, your family doesn't survive in that kind of deployment. So, in terms of international obligations, a very limited contribution towards it. We can't sustain an enduring contribution. And then, of course, as we move through the milestones, so the value proposition essentially speaks to being able to progressively improve our sustainability on these operations. First and foremost, as point number one, is our border safeguarding must be optimized and our maritime patrol must be optimized. That's what we do back home, safeguard South Africa. And then we will systematically build the capacity to influence, to reach and intervene, and to have a positive role on the African continent in the future. And I'll just unfold these slides just to give you an indication as we go through the milestones and as we start to realign the defense organization so we achieve a far better value proposition up to where we regard the impact of the defense review to be, which is milestone 4, in which we can sustain 3 large-scale peace missions. We will have the ability to reach and intervene on a sustainable basis. We will be able to sustain our border safeguarding and our maritime patrol, and we'll be able to do it south of the Sahel. Not only restricted to the borders of South Africa, we'll be able to go beyond safety to south of the Sahel, which is essentially the role that's expected of us by the rest of Africa, and in particular the African Union, going forward. We can give you an indication of what we would have to do to re-roll and restructure and reorganize the defense force as a war force, should that eventuality arise, but that doesn't form part of our recommendations because that is something that is a contingent liability, if you like. But what's appropriate is to have a defense force that can shift rapidly from being a peacetime, well, I say a peacetime and I use that word guardedly, peacetime force towards a force that can in fact take up its role to defend the country in a conventional type of operation of warfare. For each of the milestones, we have some strategic deliverables, which we list, and I'm not going to go into them for the purposes of this presentation, but we can engage at a later date on the detail around these and the sequencing of these particular deliverables. They speak to organizational interventions, a number of them, and this is the focus of the Minister over the next 5 years, is to look at primarily the organizational interventions. We can unpack them, we can discuss them in detail with you, and then of course we start in milestone 1 positioning for capability interventions, which would be the key thrust at the end of milestone 1. Milestone 2, milestone 3, and milestone 4 will be the capability interventions sequenced in terms of the order of priority that we see and the unfolding of the commitments that the Defence Force is going to face over the next 20 years. And I won't go into the detail of that, but nonetheless, that's essentially what it speaks to. If, almost last one, we take the value proposition, we take where we are now. I'll just quickly explain this graph to you. We have the goals reflected in the colour schemes. In each of the colour schemes, you will have histograms. Each of those histograms refer to a task. You remember we said 4 goals and 13 tasks. The level or the size of the histogram reflects the level of compliance to the recommendations of the Defence Review in terms of the execution of those tasks. We find where we are now. In fact, we are to the left of us. We are having huge challenges, even achieving 20 to 30% of the recommendations of the Defence Review from a national strategic point of view. Massive challenge. We have 23 billion allocated to defence. Sorry. Take away 720 million sectors, I think that's a cut for this year. So it's about 42 billion that we have allocated to defence. We have a situation where we can only sustain a very, very small defence force. And I'm talking about a defence force that is about 35% smaller than the current defence force. Yet, we are required to have operational output that we only envisage sustaining by milestone 3. But we have a force that is approximately that size. So we have a budget that can sustain that output. We have a force that is approximately that size. But that budget must support an output of approximately that level, milestone 3 level of recommendation of defence review, which is a significant difference to where we are right now in what we calculate sustainability to be. Ultimately, we need to move to milestone 4, which is at the level that we are able to comply optimally to the requirements of the defence review in the interests of the security of South Africa and our contribution to the African continent. So, I reiterate milestone 4 as being the object of the exercise, that we need to have a defence force that is relevant already and able to meet the commitments as specified in milestone 4. That is our end state. I refer you to the budget vote speech of the Minister. I'm not going to go into the detail of that. She delivered on the 23rd of July 2014, and she made some key pronouncements. Essentially, the Minister has reiterated those pronouncements today. There are 6 strategic focus areas. If you want to build a defence capability, you've got to keep your finger on those 6 areas. If you look at any defence capability throughout the world, it's made up of those 6 domains. And you've got to keep your finger on the pulse. That becomes your war room agenda, so to speak. And every week you need to know what's happening in each of those 6 areas, because that builds a national defence capability. And without much ado, ultimately, in terms of that budget speech, the Defence Force has specific responsibility to develop a long-term defence development plan that will take us over the next 20 years at least. Might be 30 years, depending on our ability to fund it, and they must develop and finalise the military strategy to achieve that. And at the end of the presentation, we look then at the strategic focus areas to remind you. They are leadership, they are the funding mechanism, they are the personal renewal, organisational renewal, defence capability renewal, and defence industry technology. And I reiterate the Minister's call for working together. We are never going to achieve this unless we all work together, starting with this committee. We need to work together to get a common vision on this, and we need to make sure that we can pull this wagon through the drift. These will form the Minister's priorities going forward. So, in short, the way we will pack this out is we'll look at those 6 core areas, and we see that the Minister has a specific role in this regard, the Secretary for Defence, the Chief of the SANDF, Arms Corps, is a major player in the next phase of the development of this defence force, as is defence industry. And the linkage to defence industry for us as a defence force comes through the association that we have with Arms Corps as the Armaments Corporation of South Africa. Once again, looking at where we need to get to over the 20-year period. So in conclusion, it's clear that the world in South Africa exists is becoming increasingly volatile and unstable, and solutions to insecurity are vested in a combination of, firstly, strategic partnerships that promote peace and stability, rooting a democracy on the continent underpinned by strong ethical governance. It's fine to have democracy. Without the ethical governance, those democracies collapse. We need to look at economic advancement, specifically for African prosperity and not anybody else's prosperity. and then the strengthening of our multilateral mechanisms, and in particular, the strength of the African Union, the FADC, and of course, our relationship with the United Nations. I think one must appreciate that the role of defense has changed over time, particularly from the Cold War period where we are now, that we're no longer just a protector of a nation state. The defense forces around the world are being applied as strategic enablers and a catalyst for change wherever they be applied. So it's crucial that our defense forces' capability and capacity must be able to ensure the defense of our sovereignty, the protection of our vital interests, and additionally, be able to support the multinational political, economic, and security interventions in Africa. So the adoption of this defense review recommendations, including the provision of the supportive and appropriate funding mechanisms, are urgently required to stabilize, restore, and ensure the defense capability of South Africa. I thank you. That, in a nutshell, is the defense review. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Minister, and Honourable Members. That is our presentation. Apologies for taking a little bit of time, but we thought it was important because, as Minister has indicated, it's a very important opportunity to us to ensure that the full content of the chance review and the program towards moving forward to implementation is attended to. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. Peff. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for your presentation also. And thank you very much, Mr. Peff, together with your team. Like we have said, this is an introductory phase of this review. As a committee, we are still going to the program has been developed, we are going to engage. Now I would like to hand over to honorable members to make comments and those who are seeking clarities or wants to be clarified on certain matters can raise their hands. Over to you, honorable members. Honourable Mayor.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me begin by saying that we certainly share the Minister's view that the defence review is of utmost importance. And it's precisely for that reason that we said for years that if the defence review does not succeed, the defence force will not succeed. And again, it's precisely for that reason that we have fought a hard behind-the-scenes battle to ensure that the Joint Standing Committee on Defence was established and that the Defence Review was the committee's first order of business. So I'm delighted that we finally arrived at this point, and I know my colleagues on the committee share that view. I wonder if I could just ask three questions of clarification. As I understand it, the defense review process will really play out over three phases. The first is what's referred to in the documents as the defense review, but is in fact a review of defense policy. The second is the development of the military strategy. And the third, then, is the development of the defense budget and the comprehensive development plan. It would seem to me that the logical process for Parliament to follow is to consider these three phases together. My question then to the Minister is, when can Parliament or when can this committee expect to receive the military strategy, which is inclusive of the force design, force structure, establishment table, capability strategy, and acquisition plan being developed by the Chief of the Defence Force, and then the long-term Defence Force development plan? When can we expect to receive those documents? Because this is a high-level policy document. That is the real veggies, and that is what needs to be what needs to serve before the committee. So that's the first question. The second question is about affordability. Now, it strikes me that Parliament cannot recommend that we approve a document, a policy document, which we know is not affordable. So the question is this, Minister. It is very important, obviously, that we satisfy ourselves that the defence review is implementable. If the defence review is to be implementable, it must be affordable. But it strikes me that, looking at the document, the Defence Review Committee met the National Treasury on one occasion to discuss the accounting functions of the accounting officer, not the budget. So my question to you is, have you interacted with Treasury, and have Treasury had sight of the Defence Review documents? Have they had sight of the estimated budget? Has that budget been approved? Therefore, is the Defence Review implementable and affordable? That is a key question. And then finally, a more specific question. I wonder whether it would be possible to go back to these sites where we identified capability gaps and the key acquisitions which will have to take place. I wonder if we could just go through what the key acquisitions will be over the four milestones and what the anticipated cost of those acquisitions will be, and whether in developing those costs, the life cycle cost of the equipment was taken into account, which was a major weakness of the 1998 defense review. Thank you.
Another question, Honorable Skofan.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I also thank the presentation from the Minister and the team of the Defence. Chairperson, I just want to hear much about the border management. When you look at the migration of the foreign communities in the area, and also the crime of stolen vehicle crossing around Swaziland, Mozambique, and so on, can I hear more maybe on the strategy on our review of how do we strengthen our power in dealing with that or in managing that? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Hassan. Now I'll give over to the Minister to respond, because I know any other hands. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members, for the question. Starting with the first question, the military strategy. I think we did point out earlier on, Honorable Mimi, that we have identified, we've established a team to develop a plan which would then result in us having a team that will deal with issues of implementation. At this point in time, that's why I kept on agonizing over the fact that it has taken us so long to establish the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. Precisely because that appointment has actually had a ripple effect on a whole range of issues. On the side of defense, our view is that we can't take things for granted and simply go ahead before Parliament has actually okayed this policy. Okay. For instance, one of the issues we are raising, military strategy, I mean, we can come and make the presentation, but I think that it would actually be undermining the parliamentary process if we were simply to go ahead and implement some of what and come and present you some of our thinking as a result of this without affording you the opportunity to discuss, not only to discuss, but also to engage the department on some of the matters which are contained in the report. The same applies to the budget issue. Budgetary issues, you probably are aware or remember that earlier on, after I joined the department, the first time I interacted with the team, they presented their report. And the first question on my side was, what is the costing of this defense review? And they said, look, we were discouraged. Am I right, General? Yes, it was outside of their mandate to cost the defense review. I then directed the team to do a very rough kind of estimation, which they had done. So what you have right now is not necessarily part of the report because it was never part of the mandate. So if we were to either act with national treasure, in the first instance, before Parliament has approved the policy, the review, it would create a beautiful problem for us. Not that National Treasury is not aware of the defense review process. They are very much aware of the defense review process. This defense review process has gone through Cabinet. Cabinet has discussed the contents of this report. However, still, if a process, if Cabinet then agrees, like it has agreed, that you take a matter to Parliament, then you bring it to Parliament, you then expect Parliament to engage in those matters, call in the department, call us to explain a whole lot of things, and thereafter take it to Parliament, because it's not just about discussing it in a portfolio committee. You still have the responsibility of taking this to the National Assembly for adoption or for investment, whatever you call it. It is from there, at that point then, that we, from the side of defense, can have and have a meaningful engagement with National Treasury. That's when we can then start having a meaningful engagement with National Treasury. We can't interact with National Treasury and request for funds for this or that before Parliament has actually said to us, we now agree with this defense review, go ahead, get more money. But certainly from the national, from the side of National Treasury, they expect us to go back to them. And now, he's literally unpacked everything that will require funding. That's why I said, if you listen to me in my opening remarks, I did say that, I must say that I'm in a state of panic about the fact that this work could not be done in good time. This was passed in March of 2014. We brought it to Parliament before we went on recess, precisely because we wanted to make sure that the first thing which happens in this, with this new administration, that Parliament would attend to this matter. In fact, when I was acting with the chair the other day, I realized that my expectations are not realistic. In that, I honestly thought that by end September, October, Parliament would have at least adopted this policy, particularly because there was a lot of broad consultation with stakeholders, including the South African public. But now I know that it seems it's going to be, it's almost impossible to commit that by end of November it will be done, because Parliament is rising on the 22nd of November, which means that this is now a matter which is going to be attended to beginning of 2015. And that impact on our planning as a making requests now to National Treasury, formal requests, not talking about the fact that National Treasury is aware that there's a defense review coming, but actually making a formal presentation that as a result of this defense review, which has now been passed, processed and passed by Parliament, we request X amount of money. Now, I seriously lament the fact that we couldn't move with speed to establish this committee. But we nonetheless, within the department, have established a team, which is, as I say, drawing up a plan on the assumption, with the assumption that Parliament will finally approve this. So that the moment you do that, when we kick off with our program of actual implementation. So that team, among others, we try to establish a team in my office, which will, after this plan has been developed, will now monitor the actual implementation of the program, of the plan that is being developed. That is why we are saying we will have a program office, which will be dealing with issues of implementation. And of course, the plan which we are preparing is a plan that will have set and frame. But of course, honorable members, if at some point you allow us the opportunity, we can make a team available to come and present to you a plan so that you have an idea of the kind of plan we are developing. The So to talk about implementation in the Affordable Defense Review, yes, Honorable Member, as you know, there are many capabilities that we have to acquire, but my emphasis to the Defense Force has been that the Defense Review should not be seen as a way of increasing necessarily the budget of the Defense Force. In that, if you look at milestone number one actually is implementable without necessarily getting or acquiring more financial resources. If you look at milestone number one actually directs the Defense Force to ensure that we maintain the status quo. In other words, what is there, what is in place, what is available, you do not remove, you do not go down, but rather you maintain the status quo while you are preparing for the implementation of milestone number two. And even when you look at milestone number two, you will see that milestone number two allows you for slight upgrading of what is currently in place. And then when you go to third milestone and so on, that's when now it will be expected that there is great improvement of the current system which you have. So milestone number one, I think it gives us a breather. It allows for an opportunity to plan for the implementation of milestone two, milestone three going forward. Because it says, for instance, it's in the borderline, you may be able to maintain the current. In other words, you are having 13 companies in the border instead of 21. But you may as well maintain, if you can't go up for now, you may keep the 13 companies, but going down is not an option and will not be acceptable. And this applies to the many other issues which are raised under milestone number one. So I take it that milestone number one, at least, gives us a breather in order to plan and secure the necessary funding for us to take this program of the Defense Review forward. It applies to Honorable Professor, to border management as well. As I said, we have 13 companies. We wish we could go up, but the situation is such that for now we are unable to do that. But in terms of what we are being directed to do by the team which compiled this report, we cannot go down. If anything, we should be going up, but at least it allows for us, whilst we are getting all the things which we need to get in place, including funding, it allows for us to keep the system. It does not mean that milestone number one directs us to be stagnant. If there's a need, if we think that there's a way in which, for instance, we can improve some elements of milestone one, number one, we should be able to do that. I hope I've answered your questions, Honorable Members. If not satisfactorily, I'm sorry, but I...
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Honorable Members, I think we do have an understanding that this is not a last engagement with the department around the issue of the review. By saying that, I mean there are a lot and lots of engagements that are going to take place around the issue of this defense review. I'm looking at the time because party caucuses are starting at 10. But when we're talking with the co-chairperson here, we said, yes, we don't have enough time, but as the committee, we'll need to make sacrifice around this agent matter so that it can be adopted by Parliament, so that the first milestone can be implemented by the department. So let us at least make sure that we commit ourselves where we need to meet until late at night. Let us do so, because this is important, not only for us, but for the country. the continent and the West. So I suggest that we wait for the program, because we said the program when we adopted it, it's flexible. So we'll look into the program of the committee and align it with the agency of the review. Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you very much, Secretary and your team. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. I just got a call from the SABC.